One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hey, that one was fancy.
Fun, new, fresh.
Exciting, even.
I've been waiting for this after you left off on a complete cliffhanger on part one.
Yeah, part two is going to be good.
What was the last thing that you actually said? I don't remember exactly what, but I knew that I was disappointed.
Before we jump in to Bonnie and Clyde, okay, it's the first 3 seconds of our episode. I wanted to let our listeners know that if they head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast, they get access to 41 bonus episodes. And our most recent bonus episode is about a plane crash that is pretty intense.
Yeah, very intense. It was a really good story. And not to mention that the Patreon episodes are ad-free and a day early.
That's true. Our normal episodes are ad-free and a day early. And you also get exclusive bonus access to bonus episodes. Hello,
I can't bonus speak. Access to bonus episodes, folks.
It's pretty huge over there, so check it out. But with nothing else to say about that, we can now jump into Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah, I'm chomping at the bit.
Okay, so
I don't, what does that saying even come from?
Who knows and who cares?
Okay. Is this how the audience feels like all the time?
Listen, where we left off, Bonnie is in jail. They did a robbery of a hardware store.
Sweet.
To get a bunch of guns. I believe there were guns in this hardware store, and there was a night watchman, and he was there, and the police were called, and they were cornered, and Bonnie and also Ralph Fultz were captured by police, and Clyde ran away. He left Bonnie in the dust.
Right.
Bonnie's upset.
Right, but ultimately will not change her behavior.
Ultimately, yes, that is true. She will not change her behavior. But for right now, she's upset and behind bars. So that's where we left off in part one. And when we look at part two, this is probably what you were expecting when you clicked on an episode about Bonnie and Clyde. This is the Bonnie and Clyde episode. Part one was all the backstory and still very interesting information, but this is the real meat and potatoes of Bonnie and Clyde.
Right. But I mean, you know, you need to tell the tale of how they became what they were.
Yeah, and I agree. There's also way more information, so even cutting it down to just two parts is difficult, but
yeah, the amount of notes that you've taken is probably the most you've ever taken.
Possibly. But without further ado, why don't we just jump right in? So we left off around April of 1932. The Great Depression was in full swing, people were so poor, but there were also droughts and dust storms, which were killing farm animals and crops.
Like a sick joke.
Yeah, you know? Seriously. Most days, it was next to impossible to spend any amount of time outside because the dust would choke you. Due to all the economic instability, there was a rise of crime in Texas and just around the U.S. in general. And much of it was organized crime. And Bonnie and Clyde would become the most notorious gang in Texas history. There were a lot of notorious gangsters, but what made them stand out was on top of all of their crime they committed, they were also a love story that ended in a great tragedy. On April 20th, 1932, Clyde arrived back in West Dallas and told his family what had happened to Bonnie and Ralph Fultz. Clyde sent his little brother Elsie and his older brother Buck's wife Blanche to the Kaufman jail to tell Bonnie he was working on getting her out and she should just sit tight. There was a good chance Bonnie wouldn't get any time at all, but if she did, Clyde wanted to be ready to break her out.
Wait, so you say notorious gangs? Is it it's just the two of them, right?
No, there's quite a few other people that will be involved.
Fun.
Yeah. So Clyde went out looking for the Lake Dallas gang, but found out that two of the members were missing. So at that point, he had only half a gang and no guns. He and the remaining two guys in the gang robbed a hardware store for guns, which they got, but again, wanted to test them. Because remember, they got all these guns last time and they wanted to test them, and then they found out that all of them were faulty and none of them shot.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, they didn't steal them. They bought them, right?
No, they stole them.
I thought that they bought them from somebody.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Well, they stole the money from the bank and then they bought them from a shady guy who sold them bad guns.
Right.
Yeah, but this time they stole a bunch of guns and they wanted to test them out. So they went to the riverbank to test them out and they worked, but a nearby person heard the gunshots and called the sheriff, who showed up with several deputies.
Yeah, you can't just like shoot guns into the river in Dallas.
It's also, it's Texas, you know?
Well, it's Texas, but like this is a downtown area.
Right. So Clyde and his other guys had to rush out of there quickly without the guns that they had just stolen.
Idiots.
Weirdly enough, the other two missing members of the gang pulled up after they had already left and the police had arrived, like looking for their other gang members, and they were promptly arrested by the police who were already on the scene. And at that point, a lot of people and law enforcement agencies were looking for Clyde Barrow. The Denton County Sheriff's Office put out a bulletin about the arrest of two gang members and the arsenal of guns that they had just recovered. The Lake Dallas gang had escaped on foot, leaving behind a stolen car, which was the same car that Clyde had stolen in Kaufman after Bonnie had gotten arrested.
So they're starting to connect some dots. Also, this is the golden age of crime. Now, like, there's no fingerprints. There's no technology.
Yeah.
You could be pretty sloppy as long as you aren't, like, getting caught in person.
Yes, this is very much like the Wild West of crime. Yeah. Like, among the guns recovered was a revolver that ended up being the one Clyde had stolen off of Sheriff James T. Taylor when he and Ralph Foltz had abducted him. So if we remember in part one, one of Clyde's signature moves when he's faced with a cop is he kind of like disarms them and takes them hostage. So this happens a couple times throughout the story. This was one of those times. So among the guns recovered, they found this sheriff's revolver. And because of that, Taylor was able to identify Ralph Foltz as one of his kidnappers, and they connected the stolen guns to the hardware store, the thing stolen in Kaufman, and everything was falling into place. They were forming a direct tie between Clyde Barrow and the several crimes he had committed along the way. Ralph Foltz was kind of screwed, but Bonnie was still awaiting her trial, and she stuck to the story that she was an unwilling participant in the crimes and that she had been kidnapped by these two men. And Clyde's brother and sister-in-law told Bonnie to stick to that story because they knew that she would get way less time, if potentially none at all, if she stuck to that story. And Clyde knew he needed to keep a low profile, so he didn't do too much around this time other than like a few small robberies here and there. Bonnie was finally released in June of 1932, and when her mother picked her up from jail, she swore she was done with Clyde Barrow forever. But that was far from the truth. Throughout her time in jail, she received several messages from Clyde, who kept her updated on his movements, his state of mind, his plans, and of course, his love for her. She wanted Clyde to be an even bigger part of her life. But Clyde had gone from your run-of-the-mill robber to now being wanted for murder after a robbery gone wrong at a pawn shop in a small Texas town. Ted Rogers, one of Clyde's gang members, shot and killed this shop owner when he pulled a gun on them. They ended up with only $50 in cash and $1,500 worth of jewelry, but Clyde had met the shopkeeper's wife before the robbery, and he was worried that she would put two and two together and know Clyde had something to do with her husband's murder. So after that, the Lake Dallas gang officially disbanded and went their separate ways. And she probably wouldn't have known who was involved with her husband's murder, but the local police brought over a bunch of mugshots, and Clyde's picture was in this lineup, and she pointed him out as one of the men who killed her husband since she recognized his face. And Clyde had been there, but he was actually waiting outside in the car when the murder happened. So the reason she recognized him was because they came to the jewelry shop to like case the place the day prior.
Oh, I see.
And he struck up a conversation with the wife, and so she recognized him. But Clyde didn't actually murder her husband. He was involved, though. So an APB was put out, letting everyone know that Clyde and two other men were wanted for murder, and a $50,000 reward was being offered for the capture and conviction of all three of them. And actually, the two other men they suspected with Clyde had nothing to do with the murder, but they were having it pinned on them since they were known to hang out with Clyde.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
So Clyde went back to West Dallas briefly to explain to his family that he had nothing to do with the murder, no matter what the papers were saying.
We had to clear his name.
According to Bonnie's mother, Emma Parker, some papers were even printing stories that Clyde Barrow had been seen in the company of a young blonde woman who helped him commit this crime, which was when the story of Bonnie Parker, the gun-wielding female outlaw, was born, even though Bonnie was behind bars at the time. So there was no way she could have been a part of this murder, but the papers were just saying whatever the hell they could to get people to buy them.
Well, hey. You gotta respect the hustle.
No, I don't.
You know?
They were just naming random people. They had no proof or anything about any of it. That would
suck. Yeah, I'm just folding.
Okay.
I'm just folding.
Okay.
It was definitely not cool, but yeah. You know, we know why.
Gotta sell those papes. 5 days after the murder, a Dallas service station was robbed, and the papers printed headlines saying, Bonnie and Clyde are at it again. But neither Bonnie nor Clyde were even in the area at the time.
But neither Bonnie nor Clyde were at it again.
Yeah, literally. Raymond Hamilton was one of the men who was suspected in the murder with Clyde, who had nothing to do with it. He had been in Bay City, Michigan at the time with his father, but at that point he was back in Dallas, and he and Clyde decided it would be best if they hide out together. If we remember from part one, they didn't like each other very much. They were honestly very similar and both wanted to be in charge, so they butt heads. But they buried the hatchet and now they were hiding out together in a small rented apartment in Wichita Falls. They committed small robberies to get by, and soon enough Clyde and Raymond decided they needed to go on the run. And Clyde wanted Bonnie to come with them. She was out of jail, and she didn't want to be left behind anymore either, so she officially was a part of the action. She had gotten word to Clyde that if he was on the run, then she would be too. But if we remember, she told her mother that she was done with Clyde. So she told her mother that she was leaving to start a job, this time in Wichita Falls, but really she would be hiding out with Clyde and Raymond.
Yeah, how old does she know?
She's young. She's in her early 20s.
Yeah, but she's an adult.
She's like 20, yeah, something around there.
She's 20.
Or 21, but yeah, she's around there.
This is crazy.
I know.
Could you imagine doing this at 20?
No. I can't imagine doing it, period. But I mean, 21 or 20 is crazy. But so Bonnie, at first, didn't participate in the crimes. And even when she did later on, she apparently never shot a gun. But she was a great loader. Clyde's nephew, Buddy Barrow, later said about Clyde, quote, Clyde wasn't what you would call a cold-blooded murderer, as in walking up to shoot someone for the thrill of it. But if he felt threatened and pushed into a corner, he's going to come out firing. Bonnie suggested the three of them hide out in New Mexico at her aunt's house, who she rarely saw, but she felt like family was family, so they drove 500 miles to Aunt Millie's house.
Wait, so Aunt Millie is in the dark about what's been going on.
She's rolling up to Aunt Millie's house and knocking on the door and saying, "Hey, Aunt Millie, this is my husband and his friend."
Could you imagine? People just show up at your door.
It was a different time.
It was a different time.
This 500-mile drive was no issue for Clyde. He was an excellent driver. He would drive very fast and was no stranger to a long drive. He could drive between 500 to 1,000 miles in just 24 hours. He also came to know all the roads in Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, Arkansas, New Mexico, and Missouri, and not just the main ones, all the side roads. After his death, two of the officers who ended up taking down Clyde said that he was probably the best driver in the world. Isn't that crazy? 1,000 miles in 24 hours? Like, he actually did that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about how fast you would have to be going. Like, if you did 100, you could do it in 10. But if you did 50 miles per hour, then you'd be at,
he was going faster than 50.
Yeah, so I guess I'm not surprised. Do you have to stop to, like, pee?
Or, I assume.
You know.
But they would regularly like sleep on the road and like just grab something and go. And he was always driving. But that was like what he was known for, was like his ability to drive really long distances, really fast, and also like get out of any situation that he needed to. He was very good at it.
It's a good skill to have.
When you're an outlaw, definitely. Yeah. So when they made it to Aunt Millie's house, she saw their fancy car, their wads of cash, and the guns they shot in her backyard. And she called the police.
Family's family.
Yeah. When Deputy Joe Johns knocked on the door, Bonnie answered and told him that the gentlemen were getting dressed but would be out soon to talk with him. Clyde and Raymond snuck out the back door, armed with only an old shotgun they found in a closet because their stash was in the trunk of the car that the police officer was inspecting. But because he was looking so hard at the car, he didn't notice Clyde and Raymond sneak up on him. And Clyde aimed his gun at the sky, sent off a warning shot, and John surrendered. And they forced him into the car, and Bonnie came running out and jumped in, and they were on the road again with another kidnapped police officer.
Yeah, this is a problem.
They headed to San Antonio with their captive, and because Clyde drove through the whole day and night, they arrived there on the evening of August 14th. In Carlsbad, Deputy John's absence was noticed, and he was reported missing. And not long after that, a headless corpse was found in El Paso, and everyone just assumed that it was Deputy John's, which was when the newspapers reported that another officer was dead at the hands of Clyde Barrow and his lover and partner in crime, Bonnie Parker. Carlsbad police got a description of the car from Aunt Millie, but Clyde was way ahead of them. He was already on the prowl for a new car to steal. But he had standards. Any old car would not do. He liked the new Ford V8 models because they were really fast. Faster than the cars the police were driving. And they had steel bodies, which helped if they were being shot at or if they ran into a guardrail or something. There would be less damage on the car and it would still be drivable. But Clyde was also taking back roads to avoid detection, and there were no V8s hanging out on the back country roads. And also, when he was driving into these back road country towns, a brand new V8 would stick out like a sore thumb.
Right.
So there's pros and cons, but he's choosing to drive the car he wants.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to steal it, you might as well steal one that's fun.
Yeah, fun and fast. That was the most important part.
I mean, you're going to do all this crime and then it's not going to be fun?
True. Deputy Johns was actually very helpful throughout his time being captive. He was familiar with the area they were driving in, and with his knowledge, Clyde was able to avoid major cities like Odessa, where police had already gotten word that he was a wanted man. The next morning, on August 15th at 5 a.m., Clyde pulled the car over and told Deputy Johns to get out, and before pulling away, Clyde politely asked him to wait an hour before he called it in.
I don't think he's going to listen.
Yeah, he definitely wasn't going to do that, but they did drop him off on a side road about a mile away from a town, so they got as much time as it took him to walk the mile, and then he got to a phone and called the police. The police in San Antonio were surprised to hear from him because they thought he was a headless corpse at this point, but he was alive.
It's kind of cool.
But Bonnie, Clyde, and Raymond continued heading east, and they eventually found another V8. They decided to keep both the cars, so Raymond drove one and Bonnie and Clyde were in the other.
Why would you not ditch that car?
Bah.
Bah.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, at least he gave it to Raymond.
Yeah.
But he's like, you take the one that the cop knows the license plate to, the description of.
Yeah, eventually he began to realize that if he switched the plates, he would get farther for longer. Like, he wouldn't have to steal as many cars. But he didn't quite know that yet. So, you know, he's still kind of just stealing every car he sees, basically. But it actually didn't even matter that they got the new car because they were seen hotwiring their most recent V8. And an alert was raised and another APB was put out throughout all the towns between Victoria and Houston. And in Wharton, two police officers got it in their heads that they were going to set a trap for Bonnie and Clyde. They knew the outlaws would have to cross a specific bridge, so they parked their cars on either end of the bridge, and the idea was if they saw the stolen V8 coming, they would let them drive onto the bridge, and then they would both pull their cars in front of either side to block them onto the bridge. Which sounds like a great plan in theory, but Clyde, who was driving a little bit ahead of Raymond, saw the police cars before they saw him. And just before reaching the bridge, he slammed on the brakes, whipped around, and started driving in the other direction. Raymond wasn't as quick on his feet, but he actually did end up escaping from this trap. And the three of them ended up staying in an old farmhouse that they would use as a hideout. So they got away. The names and descriptions of Bonnie, Clyde, and Raymond were all over the papers and the radios. They were wanted in Texas, New Mexico, and Oklahoma, which sucked because Oklahoma was the state they would often use to lay low when the law was on their tail. Emma Parker talked about this in her book, saying, quote, Clyde and Bonnie were making themselves famous, or infamous, depending on the viewpoint. Their daring escapes, their breathtaking speed, the boldness with which they came and went were becoming legends up and down the land. Bonnie and Clyde had the center of the stage, and they were to keep it until they die. While hiding out, the trio targeted their first armory, which they would continue to do. And because of their armory robberies, they were eventually put on the radar of a very powerful man in America at the time, J. Edgar Hoover. The FBI wasn't what it was today, until Hoover made it that way. So at the same time that Bonnie and Clyde were causing trouble in Texas, J. Edgar Hoover was in the midst of rebuilding the Bureau into an organized, professional, and effective force. Hoover had already handled people like Al Capone, and now he was setting his sights on Bonnie and Clyde. And when they had been robbing service stations and killing people, it didn't matter so much to him, but now that they were stealing from the U.S. government and taking guns from the armory, it was an issue.
Well, if you murder people, it's fine. But if you steal from the U.S. government,
it's a problem.
We're coming for you.
Yes, exactly. So they broke into the State Guard armory at Fort Worth and stole several automatic rifles, which was when they started stockpiling and collecting the very powerful weapons that the Barrow Gang became known to cart around the United States.
Wait, so this is like the armory is what? Like old military weapons?
The armory was like a building or complex of buildings that served as a base for military units. And there they had like buildings that housed a bunch of equipment and weapons. And so they were able to steal all of this equipment and weapons. And a lot of them were like high powered military automatic guns that they were like stockpiling and using to commit a bunch of robberies and things.
And this is an issue.
This is an issue. Yeah. Wild. The other issue with the whole armory thing was that the police didn't have anything near the power of the guns that they were stealing. So like a lot of the police forces and like all these cities and states and whatever had never even seen like a big fully automatic weapon like that. Like they were dealing with very low power guns. So
right, they have like a revolver.
Right. So when Clyde and, you know, the Barrow Gang rolls up with a fully automatic whatever, they're like, how? How do we even?
Yeah, I mean, good luck.
Yeah, like what do we even do with that? Around that time, Raymond decided it was time to head out of Texas and go back to Michigan. So he headed to Grand Rapids to wait until things died down. He was wanted for murder and for kidnapping a police officer, and he had way more heat on him than he had ever had before. So he was like, I need to get the hell out of here. So on September 1st, Bonnie and Clyde left Raymond in Bay City, Michigan, and were on their way. And then it was just the two of them for a while. Raymond actually ended up being turned in shortly after they left him in Michigan because he had been bragging to a girl that he was seeing about being with Bonnie and Clyde and was actually sentenced to 200 years in prison for a murder he didn't commit.
What?
Because the murder he was like being accused of was something that he wasn't even involved in, but because he was friends with Clyde and had like done things with him in the past, they were pointing the finger at him. And so they charged him for it and he got 200 years.
Wow. Well, shut your fucking mouth,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, seriously. And Clyde saw the story in the paper about how Raymond couldn't keep his mouth shut around pretty girls. And the paper also talked about Raymond's known associate, Clyde Barrow. Clyde didn't want to let Raymond rot in prison for a murder he didn't commit. So once again, he got the idea of raiding Eastham in his mind to free prisoners, including Raymond. But for now, Bonnie and Clyde traveled around the U.S., sending postcards to their families along the way, although they never signed their names. For the most part, around this time, they were having a good time, when they could forget that they were wanted murderers. Sometimes they would pull their car off the road, hide it in bushes or trees, and spend the night there. They'd wash in creeks, and they'd eat their food cold out of cans since they couldn't risk lighting a fire and being seen. Bonnie was not a fan of how they were living. She would drive Clyde crazy because she complained a lot. She was scared of thunder and lightning. She was scared of snakes and spiders. And if she had to encounter any of those things, she would refuse to leave the car. And during this period of time, Bonnie began drinking a lot to cope with her time on the road. And although Clyde was known to have a drink or two sometimes, he mostly didn't drink. Kind of out of necessity, because if he was drunk, he couldn't drive the car and outrun the police if necessary. Clyde told his sister he would have been a fool to let his guard down, but Bonnie was drinking a lot because she was so unhappy.
The whole time you're describing it, I was like, this would be you if you were a criminal.
If I was Bonnie?
If you were Bonnie. Okay, spiders, no.
I'm like, snakes, I have to sleep no. in the grass under the stars? No.
I have to eat beans that are warm?
Cold
this
beans?
This sucks.
Yeah.
I mean...
I get it. I
can rob a bank, but God forbid there's a spider in that bank.
Yes. And I agree.
Yes.
Although Bonnie wasn't the easiest travel partner, Clyde tried to make her happy. He got her a typewriter so she could continue writing, and while they drove, Bonnie would sit in the back seat and type away. And when they weren't sleeping on the road, they relied on the kindness of strangers. They would knock on the door of a random farmhouse and ask for lodging for the evening, and as two young, well-dressed, attractive people, many people invited them into their homes. This was kind of like the time of good old Southern hospitality, and people were not turning away these two young people. There was a lot of speculation that many of these people who let them in knew exactly who they were. Their faces were all over the papers. But first of all, Bonnie and Clyde were polite. They would pay the homeowners well for their kindness, and Bonnie was warm with everyone. She loved socializing and especially loved children. She would play with the kids and beg Clyde to give them a ride in his car. Could you imagine? You have the two truths and a lie of being like, I took a ride in Clyde Barrow's car when I was a kid. That's crazy. But also, people out in the country were all in the same position. They were broke and desperate. So there wasn't a lot of good feelings toward the government or law enforcement, which made a lot more people more inclined to help out Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah, I was just about to bring this up. I was like, they have to know who they are.
Well, at the same time, there was a huge reward out for Clyde at $250,000 for a murder that they suspected he committed. So it's also entirely possible that a lot of people had no idea who they were and just thought they were helping out a young couple in their travels. Because if you're that poor and like,
oh, yeah,
you're going to turn in Clyde for $250,000. Like,
yeah, Clyde's getting the shiv, dude.
Right. So it depends. It depends. There were probably people who knew who they were, but there was also probably people who didn't. For the most part, Bonnie and Clyde would stay at these places called tourist courts, which were basically like little cheap cottages off the highway in small towns, and they would only stay one night before they would leave. They never wanted to be somewhere for too long. Their travels went on for several months, until one day, Bonnie looked at Clyde and said she wanted to see her mother. So he turned the car around and headed straight back to Dallas. The one thing they always shared was their love and devotion for their families. On October 31st, Halloween night, they very slowly drove by the Barrows' home with their lights off and threw a Coke bottle with a note inside to tell his family where to meet them. And Clyde drove Bonnie to her mother's house, where she ran in for 5 minutes before leaving again, just enough time to give her a nice squeeze. They then headed to the location they told their families to meet, and they waited. The Parker family and the Barrow family had a code for whenever Bonnie and Clyde were in town. Cumie Barrow, Clyde's mother, would tell her children and also Bonnie's mother she was cooking red beans for dinner, and that meant Bonnie and Clyde were home and they were all going to meet up for a secret family reunion somewhere. Clyde's parents and a few of his siblings were there at that meeting, at least the ones who were not in prison at the time, and while they were together, the Barrows told Bonnie and Clyde that a grocer had been murdered in Sherman, Texas, and the papers were actually pointing the finger at Bonnie, claiming that the gangster's blonde companion had shot down this grocer in cold-blooded violence. But Bonnie and Clyde hadn't even been in Texas when the murder happened. The newspapers were making up stories about Bonnie and Clyde, because that's what sold. Nobody wanted to waste what little money they had to buy a paper telling them how terrible their lives were. But they would if the story was about the outrageous crimes of a pair of lovers on the run. They reported on their alleged crimes as if the reporter had a front row seat, really over-exaggerating and completely fabricating so many stories. They spent a very short amount of time in Dallas. They needed to get back on the road, but Clyde wanted to bring more people into their gang because they needed money, and in order to get the money they needed to do a big job. And Clyde had always wanted to be the leader of a gang, so now was his chance. With the papers writing stories about how dangerous and terrifying they were, he could use that to recruit people. Frank Hardy and Hollis Hale were two rookie criminals who idolized the legendary Clyde Barrow, so they very quickly jumped at the opportunity to work with him. On November 29th, Bonnie was sent into a bank to case the place with their new gang. You know, it was just Bonnie inside, but they were trying to get this bank. And that was kind of a bad idea to send her in by herself because, one, Bonnie didn't know what she was doing, and two, she also looked extremely out of place. Because those days, women didn't just walk into banks, and if they did, they were usually accompanied by a man. So the next day, when the men arrived at the bank to actually rob it, the employees were ready for them. They had their guns drawn, and they began shooting at them.
Whoa, so they saw them and just started shooting?
Yeah.
They didn't point and be like, get out?
No, they started shooting. So they began having a shootout, and meanwhile, Clyde and Frank grabbed as much money as they could before they escaped. But when they ran outside, there were a bunch of townspeople out there who had been alarmed by the commotion. So the townspeople had their guns raised as well. And so they had to run away from the employees inside and the townspeople outside, all of which are shooting at them. And they had only gotten away with $115.
Bro, how did everyone miss?
That's what
no
I want.
No one hit them?
Yeah, they're all really terrible shots. But Frank Hardy told them he had only gotten $80, which they split three ways between him, Bonnie and Clyde as one, and then Hollis. But then Frank and Hollis made up a story that they needed to go into town and get something, and they never came back. And Clyde later read in the paper how much had actually been stolen from the bank, which was when he figured out that he had been double-crossed. But a new, more trustworthy member of the Barrow gang would be W.D. Jones. He had been a friend of the Barrow family since childhood, and at the time that he joined the gang, he was only 16 years old. When he joined, he was supposed to only be with Bonnie and Clyde for one night. His job was to keep watch as they slept, but he ended up staying with them a lot longer, almost until the bitter end. After leaving West Dallas, the trio checked into a tourist court outside of Dallas around 2 a.m. on Christmas morning, 1932. WD's first task was to rob a Temple grocery store with Clyde while Bonnie waited in the car, kind of as an initiation. Both Clyde and WD were armed, and they entered the grocery store, but after three steps inside, WD stopped in his tracks and then ran outside the car. Clyde apparently berated WD, while Bonnie made fun of him for not being able to do the simple task of robbing a grocery store, and WD at that point said he wanted to go home. So Clyde stopped the car next to a Model A car that was parked outside of a house and told him that he needed to steal this car to drive himself home, and the car had the keys in the ignition. But when WD got out of the car and tried to start it, it wouldn't start right away since it was a cold day, so Clyde got into the car with him. And at that moment, an old man and woman came out of the house that it was parked in front of and began yelling at them to get out. The man who owned the car, Doyle Johnson, who was spending Christmas at his parents' house with his wife and kids, ran out and reached into the car and grabbed Clyde by the collar. Bonnie was still in the V8 and was laying on the horn, yelling for Clyde and WD to get back into the car. But by that point, Doyle Johnson had him by the neck and wasn't letting go. Clyde then shot and killed Doyle Johnson. Bonnie claimed it was WD, although that was definitely not the case. 27-year-old Doyle Johnson was killed on Christmas morning as his wife and children watched in horror from the windows of his parents' house. Clyde didn't even want that car. It was slow and notoriously bad to deal with. They actually ended up abandoning it shortly after. And after the murder, Clyde told WD he couldn't go back home now. And since WD thought he would be wanted for murder, he didn't argue. He was officially part of the Barrow Gang.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Not long after that, the three were almost caught when they wandered into a police trap set for another criminal. Raymond Hamilton's sister, Lillian McBride's house, was kind of known as a safe haven for criminals, and the police were there looking for a man named Odell Chambliss, who had recently robbed a bank, and the police believed that he would be hiding there. So on January 6, 1932, police showed up to the home and were let inside by Lillian McBride's sister to wait for Odell Chambliss. But that evening, Clyde showed up while the police were inside, and probably to alert Clyde that the police was inside, but also potentially she was meaning what she was saying, Lillian's sister ran outside yelling, "Don't shoot, think about my babies." So Clyde knew that there were police inside and shot inside the windows at the cops who were crouching down in the living room with the lights off. And the cops ran out with their guns drawn, and Clyde killed 51-year-old deputy Malcolm Davis. Clyde really didn't want to kill anyone, but he'd get cornered and feel like he had no choice. WD also started shooting, and Bonnie yelled at him to stop, saying he would shoot someone in the house or on the street. When Clyde started running, Bonnie slid into the driver's seat and hit the gas, and they were out of there. Sheriff Richard Smoot Schmid was pissed because they had carefully planned this raid, and it ended in the death of a deputy. He was even more mad when the papers began printing that maybe someone with no law enforcement experience should be sheriff. So they're now taking jabs at him. And he was made to look like a fool, and he was not happy. And the next morning, the papers printed that Clyde Barrow had actually been on the scene, and for weeks after Texas law enforcement was in a frenzy following leads and tips from people claiming they had seen Clyde and Odell Chambliss together. But on January 13th, an inside source from the Dallas PD told the papers that a girl had been with the two men and she was, quote, as tough as the back end of a shooting gallery, and she's been missing from these parts for a long time, which was when Bonnie started being seen as just as big of a threat as the men. But Odell Chambliss wasn't with them, and he actually turned himself in not long after with proof that he wasn't even in Texas at the time of the murder. He was in Los Angeles. Which made law enforcement look even worse because they had continually said that Odell was there with Clyde that night. They swore up and down. Sheriff Schmidt knew the only way to get respect from the media was by getting a big fish. He needed to catch Clyde Barrow, and then he would be seen as a hero instead of being made to look like a fool. So he brought in two deputies, Ted Hinton and Bob Alcorn, who had a connection to Bonnie and Clyde. Hinton had been one of Bonnie's regulars when she was a waitress, and Alcorn had been the one to first arrest Clyde when he had gotten caught with the chickens with his brother. Or turkeys, I can't remember.
Doesn't matter. Pick one.
Poultry, right? Hinton and Alcorn claimed they had spies in West Dallas, so they could hopefully learn when Bonnie and Clyde were in town, and then they could apprehend them. But they actually wouldn't return to West Dallas for a while after that. Clyde drove Bonnie and WD all over the United States. They committed small burglaries, but had no run-ins with police because Clyde learned that he could take new license plates and make it harder for law enforcement to find them. He also, I believe, cut telephone wires leading into towns, which made it so that, like, the police in one town where he was running from couldn't call to the next town to be like, look out for this guy in this car. It was as simple as that. Like, he just had to cut some wires.
It makes sense, but it's just mind-boggling that something that simple would be so effective.
I know, right? Clyde was the driver, Bonnie was the navigator when she wasn't writing poetry, and WD was their little sidekick with a camera who would take their pictures sometimes. They used nicknames in public. Clyde called Bonnie honey or baby, she called him daddy, and they both called WD kid. WD called Bonnie sis and Clyde bud. When they would stop and stay somewhere, they would all share a room with WD on the floor. But in all this chaos, being on the run didn't stop Bonnie from doing her makeup and hair as if she were going to walk outside to paparazzi every single day. All three of them really cared about their appearances, and one of the luxuries they actually afforded themselves on the run was sending their clothes to the dry cleaners. They didn't want to wear dirty clothes, and they didn't want to do it themselves, so they had them professionally cleaned. Like, regularly.
Wow.
That little detail just made me laugh because...
That is really funny. But who wants to do laundry?
I get it. It's a drag. So from Christmas Eve of 1932 until March of 1933, the Barrow Gang was only Bonnie, Clyde, and W.D. Jones. But in late March, two more members would be added. Buck and Blanche Barrow. Buck is Clyde's brother. And he was the one who first got Clyde into kind of his life of crime, if we remember. And for most of the story so far, Buck has actually been in prison. And that was kind of from the doing of Blanche, not because she like turned him in or anything, but because Buck had been on the run and Blanche wanted to live a normal life. So she convinced Buck to turn himself in and just like serve whatever sentence he got. And then when he got out, they could have a normal life. So Buck had been serving his time, and now, in March of 1933, on March 23rd, actually, your birthday, Buck Barrow was released from Huntsville Prison. Whoa, Huntsville Prison.
Wow, this is really lining up.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
And was granted a full pardon. So that basically meant his criminal record would be wiped clean. And
what did he do again?
Honestly, I don't remember what he did to get into prison, but there was something going on where, like, the governor at the time was like pardoning a lot of people for some reason. I really don't know the backstory of that, but for whatever reason, he was pardoned and his criminal record was wiped clean. So,
wow.
Him and Blanche were going to have the life that they had always dreamed of, and they could just be normal people. He was no longer a criminal. He had served his time and he was done.
Wait, so I'm sorry. That Blanche is his wife.
Yeah.
Cool.
So when he headed out of prison, he went to join his wife, Blanche, in Denison, Texas, where she had been living. And during his time in prison, he had decided he wanted to do the right thing and make an honest living. But he felt responsible for leading his younger brother, Clyde, down the wrong path. So he wanted to find Clyde and talk some sense into him, see if he could convince him that he could have a better life than just being on the run. He could turn himself in and maybe the state would go easy on him like they had with Buck. Or he could go somewhere that nobody knew his name or face and just completely start over. So on March 25th, Buck and Blanche went to Blanche's parents' home to visit. And that night, Clyde, Bonnie, and WD showed up. Blanche's stepfather didn't know who they were, so he just let them in, and Buck heard them talking downstairs, and so he went downstairs and returned to their bedroom where Blanche had been waiting with Clyde, Bonnie, and WD. Clyde and WD were holding shotguns, and Bonnie was very drunk and looked as if she hadn't slept in days, and she immediately fell into the bed with Blanche. So this is already kind of a chaotic scene.
Wow.
WD kept watch at the window while Blanche and Bonnie were in bed and Clyde and Buck were deep in conversation. Blanche was not liking what she was hearing because, you know, Bonnie's kind of chattering, talking her ear off because this is the first woman she's seen in a long time and she's drunk also. But she's listening to Clyde and Buck out of the corner of her ear. And Clyde was talking about his prison raid kick and he wanted their help. Clyde promised if they helped, they wouldn't get into any trouble. He just wanted them to deliver a message to Raymond Hamilton inside. And he promised them money, which he knew they needed to go and start their new life together. Clyde said he would make sure they had enough to buy a little house somewhere and start a business and live their dreams. So he's kind of really manipulating them, being like, you just help me with this one thing and I'll give you all the money you need to start your new life.
Yeah, it'll be perfect. Everything, nothing will go wrong.
Nothing at all. But Blanche was not sold and told Clyde to go find someone else to help him. And Clyde looked at Buck, but Buck agreed with Blanche. So he dropped it for a short time. The three men went outside to sit in Clyde's car so they could talk. And that's when Clyde said anything he could to get Buck on board without the influence of his wife. When they came back inside sometime later, the mood had changed. The men were drunk and were having a good time. They were laughing and joking and chatting. And that was when Clyde told Blanche that he had changed his mind about the prison raid. He didn't want to do all that. He really wanted all of them to just leave and go somewhere altogether. They had plenty of money. They could rent a place and spend a few weeks or even a month together hanging out. Blanche and Bonnie could furnish the place, and then when they went their separate ways, Blanche and Buck could just take all their stuff and use it in their new home. Blanche said in her memoir, quote, Clyde made Buck believe we would be in no danger, and that Buck would not get into trouble. Clyde said they would have plenty of money, and not have to pull any robberies for quite some time, not while we were with them anyway. Buck said he didn't see any harm in going, and he had already promised Clyde they would go. So he had decided for them, even though Blanche really didn't want to do that. Bonnie loved the idea and begged Blanche to come. She said it would be great to have another girl around and it would be like an extended family reunion. Blanche was still a hard no. Although after Bonnie, Clyde, and WD left, Buck told Blanche he really wanted to join them. There wouldn't be any trouble, and this was his opportunity to talk some sense into Clyde. He cried and told Blanche Clyde had even given him money for the trip. And when that didn't work, he got angry and said he wouldn't force her to go, but he was. And since Blanche didn't want to lose Buck, she begrudgingly agreed. So with that, Blanche and Buck joined them in Joplin, Missouri. It actually wasn't just Buck and Blanche. They also brought along their fluffy white dog, Snowball.
Oh, they even have a dog.
It's really Blanche's dog, but yes, they have Snowball as well. On April 1st, they rented the apartment that would be their home for the next several weeks, 3347 and a half 34th Street in Joplin, Missouri.
So specific.
Uh-huh. For a while, things were okay. Blanche basically did all the cooking and cleaning, with the help of Clyde, since Bonnie refused to cook and rarely cleaned. But they played poker, they drank beer, which had recently been made legal after Prohibition, they did jigsaw puzzles, they occasionally went into town to see movies, they had their groceries and dry cleaning delivered, and they rarely got up before noon since they were always up so late and Bonnie would sleep until 1, like every single day. And Buck had tried to talk to Clyde, telling him people weren't getting the electric chair anymore. Clyde would probably just get some prison time. But Clyde told Buck he didn't care. He would rather have the chair than go back to prison. Things seemed okay, but Clyde hadn't been entirely honest. Their money was running out, and Blanche began to notice that the men had been going out after dark to quote-unquote pick something up and realized that they were most likely committing robberies. And soon enough, they had come back to their apartment laughing loudly with a bunch of guns in their arms. They had robbed another National Guard armory. These were serious military-grade weapons, including what would be Clyde's signature gun, the BAR, or the Browning Automatic Rifle. and Blanche was pissed. She let them have it, and the morning after, she told Buck they had been there for a few weeks, and now it was time to go, so she and Buck could start their life together. And Buck agreed. He said he couldn't get through to Clyde, and they could leave, but he just had to do a little bit of work on their car, so he needed a few days.
You lying rat bastard.
I don't know that he was a lying rat bastard. I think
okay,
he actually...
Okay, well then, okay. Maybe I'm too...
Skeptical?
I'm too harsh. You're lying to yourself, though.
Maybe.
You just went and robbed an armory?
Well, there is one thing for certain, that Clyde was a terrible influence on Buck, which, you know, is funny considering Buck was the terrible influence on Clyde, but one thing that Blanche noticed was that now that Buck was out of prison, he hadn't been drinking in prison, and now that he was with Clyde, he had been drinking a lot, and when he was drinking, he would do reckless things, and he would yell at her, and it was just not so great. So he's making bad choices, and Blanche is desperate to get out of there. But he was like, I gotta change the oil in the car because, you know, we're gonna drive somewhere really far away and we don't want to break down. And so I think he probably meant that, but, you know, they didn't realize that they were kind of in a place where they needed to be a little bit urgent because they had already spent weeks there. So they didn't think that the police would just roll up on them tomorrow, but
well,
oops.
You did just rob an armory. Like, they're not gonna wait around.
Yeah, so the Barrow Gang thought they were keeping a low enough profile, but they had not been.
You're getting your groceries and dry cleaning delivered.
Yeah, but more than that, they were five new people in this small community. They kept to themselves. The men went out at night and there were gunshots being heard. So there was a lot of sketchy stuff going on. And in Joplin, there was a car theft operation already happening. So cars were being stolen, stripped for parts, and those parts were being sold. So the community began getting suspicious of these newcomers and someone alerted police. April 13th was the day their family vacation was going to end. Buck had changed the oil on their car and had gotten gas. Clyde and WD were out robbing something to get travel money. But Blanche had a terrible feeling. And she was right to, because just outside was a five-man police team who had come to serve a search warrant. They were armed, but definitely not expecting to be met with the Barrow Gang. Like, they thought that this was just some random people who were stealing cars. They did not know that they were rolling up to the Barrow Gang. Clyde and WD had already gotten home and pulled their stolen car into the garage, and the police blocked the driveway to prevent any exit from the garage. And one policeman tried slipping into the garage before the door shut to serve the search warrant, but when he went inside with the warrant and also a gun in hand, either WD or Clyde saw him and shot him, and he fell outside on the driveway and bled to death. So now these other four officers are seeing this and they're like, oh shit. So that started a shootout between the police and Clyde and WD and soon Buck, because one shot got WD in the abdomen. So WD ran upstairs bleeding and fell into a terrified Blanche's arms asking her for help, but she didn't know what the hell to do. All she knew was that they had to get the hell out of there. None of the Barrow Gang knew how they were going to get out of there because both of their cars were blocked by police and they couldn't make it out of there on foot. Clyde ordered everyone into their V8 sedan. Blanche and Bonnie were still in their nightgowns and probably didn't even have shoes on, but they somehow pushed one of the cars out of the way and made it out of there. Blanche...
Under gunfire?
Yeah. So Blanche had been running after Snowball, who had gotten out and was running away, but they snatched her back into the car and they made their escape and she never saw Snowball again.
Oh, that's sad.
It is sad. But hopefully Snowball got adopted by a lovely family and never had to hear gunfire again. Although they're in Missouri, so that's wishful thinking.
Well, I mean, you know, less gunfire.
Yeah.
She's in a better place.
Controlled gunfire.
Yeah.
Gunfire, excuse me. So Clyde had been shot in the chest, but the button on his shirt had absorbed most of the force, and the bullet was shallow enough in his chest that Bonnie was able to dig it out later, and he was actually okay. I mean, think about how strong that button has to be. It must have been a metal button.
Hey, they don't make them like they used to.
They really don't. Blanche was beside herself when she realized how big of a mess they were really in. At least two men had been killed, and she knew they'd be wanted for murder that she didn't commit. She was in shock as she saw her hopes and dreams of a normal life falling apart around her. They were able to get some first aid supplies for WD and Clyde, who had been shot, but they had to figure out if the bullet went all the way through WD, and they did that by putting a tree branch or like a twig through his wound and figured out that the bullet had gone through, so he would be fine.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
And then they probably just poured hydrogen peroxide like directly into his bullet wound. So.
Wow. Bite this towel, dude.
Seriously. The group was living one day, or really 1 hour at a time, driving all through the day and only stopping somewhere for an hour or so at a time to get a little sleep or rob somewhere for a little money before getting back on the road again. They began to feel extremely anxious and paranoid. Joplin was their closest call with police. And what happened in Joplin was nationwide news. After the gang cleared out, police went into the apartment and found almost everything they had, including their very powerful guns, which was eye-opening for police who had never even seen guns this powerful. It made them seem much more dangerous. They also found Bonnie's poetry, Blanche's purse with her marriage license to Buck inside, their expensive clothes, and one of the biggest pieces of evidence was a bunch of pictures that they had taken on the road. So WD had a camera that he used to snap pictures of all of them during their time on the road together, just kind of for fun. And when the police found these rolls of film, they got them developed immediately, and they found a bunch of pictures of them looking like outlaws. There were pictures of Bonnie smoking a cigar and holding a gun, a picture of Bonnie holding Clyde at gunpoint, Clyde and Buck, Blanche and WD. They were all doing, you know, crazy stuff in their suits and looking like gangsters. And of course, the news went insane for these pictures because before now, the only photos they had of Clyde and Buck were mugshots from when they were children. And they didn't have any pictures of Bonnie or Blanche or even WD because it was 1933 and they couldn't just Google it. So now they had pictures of all of them wearing suits and holding guns, looking like gangsters. And these photos showed a group of people who enjoyed being on the run and doing crime, and also showed a very unladylike gangster Bonnie, you know? The photo of Bonnie and Clyde smoking cigars and holding guns were plastered on every newspaper, and people were honestly more shocked by Bonnie with a cigar in her mouth than they were her holding Clyde at gunpoint, because a cigar is very unladylike.
What about the AK or the BAR?
I don't think the BAR was in the picture, but it was like a shotgun, so. And they're in Texas, so women hold guns in Texas.
That is hilarious.
But a cigar?
A cigar. Oh,
clutch your
no.
pearls.
How uncouth.
Oh, my days. I
have
don't
you
even
ever
know
smoked a cigar?
That. No. I've tasted. I've done like one puff.
Not for me.
I'm a lady.
Not for me. Yeah, I'm a lady too.
Yeah, exactly. The newspapers very quickly identified Bonnie, Clyde, Buck, and Blanche, but didn't know who WD was, since he was only 17 at the time, so his name just wasn't mentioned. They didn't know who this mysterious fifth member of the Barrow Gang was. With these pictures, the news and the public began to really romanticize Bonnie and Clyde and made them seem like their life was glamorous. But in reality, their lives at that point were getting really hard. They were constantly on the run, they were injured, sleeping on the ground, probably bathing in creeks, and they definitely didn't feel glamorous. It was around that time Clyde had told WD to steal a new car. And he did, but the owners saw him doing it and ran outside, which was when Clyde, Bonnie, Buck, and Blanche had to take them hostage. And they eventually let them go, but they had no idea where WD had gone. Clyde thought they had lost him and looked everywhere for WD, like driving around multiple states looking for him, and Buck was convinced that WD had just left them willingly to get away from this life, which honestly would have been a good thing. He was only 17 after all, and the police didn't know his name. Clyde and Buck argued about this a lot, because Clyde was convinced WD wouldn't have left them, but in reality, he had. He later said when he got in that car and started driving, he realized he could just leave. But that wouldn't be his last time in the Barrow Gang. He took a little hiatus, but he would be back. For now, it was just Bonnie, Clyde, Blanche, and Buck. But the Dust Bowl had picked back up, which made it next to impossible to sleep outside, so they once again relied on the kindness of strangers, who were excited to house them. Because now, there's no guessing if people knew who they were. They knew who they were. And a lot of them were like, yeah, we'll house you, spend the night. Like, whoa, hang out.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
People are like stoked on it.
They were. And when the group made it big robbing a bank, they would organize a trip home to West Dallas to share the money with their families. A lot of the money they stole actually went to their families. And at one of these family meetups, Bonnie's mother tried to convince her to turn herself in and let this life go. But Bonnie refused and said it was inevitable that Clyde would die, and she wanted to be at his side and die with him when that time came. So she knew.
Wow. What a way. I don't know how you get there, but Jesus, what a way to live.
Yeah.
You're like, we're going down.
A captain goes down with his ship, I guess.
With a cigar in her mouth.
She actually hated that they printed that picture of her. And like, she would spend...
She's like, it wasn't even a good picture.
Well, no, she would actually go around to all the like families that they, you know, helped them along the road. And she would clear up that she didn't smoke cigars. She was like, it was just for a funny picture. I don't smoke cigars.
My God. Like that was so crazy.
One of the most important things to her was like clearing up that she was still ladylike and didn't smoke cigars.
Yeah, I mean, I guess even today, this is not like an activity that women partake in that often, right?
Yeah, it's not my first thought when I think of feminine activities.
Right. Or like chew.
No.
Like chewing tobacco.
Yeah, I'm just a little lady. I don't know. Anyway, at this point, it was the summer of 1933, and they spent the next 10 days driving down the coast through Louisiana, Florida, and Georgia, and they had some time relaxing on the beach. But for some reason, Clyde couldn't get over the fact that WD wasn't with them. Even though he knew it was extremely risky, with the cops constantly checking in on his family, he made another special trip to West Dallas, this time just with Bonnie, and found WD and asked him to come back on the road, and he agreed. So he was back in the Barrow Gang. They tracked him down, and he said yes, he'd come back. But almost immediately, they got into trouble. They stayed...
Oh my God, WD.
I know. They stayed a night in a motel in a small town where, once again, they stuck out like sore thumbs with their fancy clothes and their car. But when they left, Clyde took advantage of the flat desert landscape and began driving like an absolute maniac. It was nighttime, and he was speeding, going like 70 miles per hour down a closed road, and didn't notice a detour sign that he had driven past because there was a bridge that was being built. And he drove through a wooden barricade, and the car flipped over and over and over until it landed on its side in the Red River. There wasn't much water in this river, so they didn't drown, but Bonnie was really hurt. People in a nearby farmhouse witnessed this crash and came running outside, and they pulled Clyde and WD out of the window, and they saw that they were banged up, but they were fine. But Bonnie was not fine.
How are they fine?
I mean, they were bleeding. Like, Clyde had a broken nose and WD was, you know, covered in scratches, but they weren't, like, broken and dead. But Bonnie was not doing well. On top of being bloody and cut up herself, her leg had been soaked in battery acid, causing severe chemical burns from her hip to her right ankle.
Oh, my God.
WD said her injuries were so bad he could see Bonnie's bone in some places, and Bonnie had to be carried into the farmhouse.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
They tried to treat her burns with whatever things they could, but ultimately the people in the farmhouse were like, you gotta call a doctor. But Clyde said no. If Bonnie was gonna die, then so be it. Which is cold.
This is what she signed up for.
It's true, but still, it's cold.
That's cold.
Clyde went back to the car and retrieved his guns, at which point these farmers were like, this is bad news. I don't know who these people are, but they have a lot of guns and we have to go get the police.
So I thought everyone knew them.
I mean, it's dark and they just were in a car crash. So I don't think people were like, oh my God, it's Clyde Barrow. Anyway, one of them left to go get the police. And Clyde noticed this and knew that whoever had left was going to do that. And soon they came back with a few cops. But Clyde was prepared, and as soon as they walked inside, they were facing the barrel of Clyde's BAR. Bonnie, somehow, stood up and took the cop's guns, which they probably just handed over to her since she looked like an actual zombie. And also, Clyde was pointing his very powerful automatic gun at them. A woman walked into the room holding her baby, not knowing that anything was going down, that Clyde was holding policemen at gunpoint with an automatic weapon. And when this woman walked in, WD got spooked and actually shot at this woman and her baby. And it was buckshot, so like the bullet sprayed. And thankfully they didn't get killed, but they were hit with a few pieces of like the sprayed bullet, I suppose. And like the baby had like a cut on her head and like the woman had like a few cuts on her arms. But it was still crazy. And the papers went insane with that one. They were like, outlaws shoot at woman and baby and blah, blah, blah. They're so dangerous.
I'm going to defend the papers here. I mean, what else are you supposed to say?
No, I agree.
He shot at a woman and her baby.
Yeah, no, he did.
And hit them.
He did that. He did do that.
With a gun.
Thankfully, he didn't kill them, but he did do that.
Well, yeah. A few inches left or right, up or down.
Yeah,
I mean, it was pretty close.
There's no other way to paint it. Hitting a baby with some buckshot is really bad.
Yeah, I don't even really think you need to sensationalize the headline.
That's true. Clyde took the two cops into their own car and put them in the back seat with Bonnie laying across them, and they took off to meet back up with Blanche and Buck. And they thought Bonnie would die. After getting to Blanche and Buck, they eventually let the cops go instead of killing them because they had been so nice to Bonnie. But he did kind of question that. He's like, should we kill them or should I let them go? And then he's like, well, they kind of cradled Bonnie really nice, so I'll let them go.
The fine line that you tell as a hostage of Clyde.
Yeah, yeah, truly.
I mean, he hasn't killed any of the hostages yet, though.
No, he typically lets them go. Really, the only people he kills are people who are shooting at him, mostly.
Yeah, or like won't let him go.
Yeah, right. Eventually, Bonnie actually healed enough to keep going, but she would never be the same after that burn. Her right leg ended up curling up underneath her, since she definitely needed PT for like mobility, but that obviously didn't happen. And so it ended up that she couldn't really straighten it or put a lot of weight on it and wouldn't be able to walk normally for the remainder of her life, which honestly wouldn't be that much longer anyway. The only thing Bonnie got from this whole thing was a dependence to her pain medication on top of her drinking problem. Not great.
The end is dark.
So there was a lot of tension at that point. They had run out of money. Bonnie couldn't really travel very well, so they were kind of sitting ducks, and the group had splintered. It was Clyde, WD, and Bonnie, and then there was Buck and Blanche, because both Bonnie and Clyde separately had tension and fights with Buck and Blanche at different times. So it's kind of splintering a little bit. They did their best to keep going. There were a few other instances when they got into a shootout and killed a few other cops, but mostly they were on the run. When they needed money or supplies, they would commit a small robbery until finally they ended up in Missouri. At that point, there had been a $250 reward put out for each of these outlaws. So the cops...
$250?
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah.
I thought they were slanging quarter mil earlier.
Yeah, you know, I feel like I wrote that down right, but now that I'm saying it out loud, $250 is a big discrepancy. So maybe it was like the equivalent of $250,000 or something. I really don't know. But there were multiple rewards put out for them at different times.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's the Depression. You know, people jump at that anyway. But
yeah. So $250 would have been like really good money at that time.
Yeah.
So that was a big reward for these outlaws. which meant cops in all of these small towns, who were also just as poor as the people in these towns, kind of became bounty hunters looking for the Barrow Gang because they wanted that reward just as much as anyone else. Early on in July, Clyde and Buck robbed another National Armory and got more big guns than any of them had ever seen, and they also got some military-grade binoculars. And they robbed 3 service stations in a row until they had enough money to spend the night somewhere with a bed so that Bonnie didn't have to sleep on the cold, hard ground for another night. They decided to stop just outside of Kansas City at Red Crown Tourist Court, and Clyde and Buck had been fighting a lot at this time. They couldn't agree on anything, and Buck had decided he and Blanche were going to leave the group as soon as they could, which Clyde was not happy about. And at this tourist court, there were only 2 cabins, which was not good because that made them stick out more. Usually there were more cabins, so the 5 of them would be, you know, in a crowd of 30 or so people that were staying in these cabins, but this time it was just the 5 of them. Clyde told the manager of the place that it was just him, his wife, and his mother-in-law, and he hid Buck and WD in the trunk under some blankets. But it didn't take long for the townspeople to realize that there were 5 of them staying there. Blanche and Buck took the left cabin, and Bonnie, Clyde, and WD took the right one. And Buck and Clyde were simply not speaking to each other at this point. So if there was any communication that needed to happen between them, Buck would kind of just send Blanche over to Clyde, and then Clyde would say something to Blanche, and then she would deliver the message back to Buck, like some children. It was really kind of crazy.
Fun.
When Blanche went to go get food for the 5 of them across the street, one of the managers told her that he wanted to walk back to the cabins with her to write down their license plate since he had forgotten to do that. But she was sketched out by that because no one had ever done that before, and she had a few other weird run-ins with people that made her feel like the people at this tourist court were onto them. So she and Buck were anxious to leave the place because she felt like things were kind of weird. When she brought this up to Clyde, he told her that she was overreacting and wanted to stay another night, which they never did. But he was getting a little cocky at this point, or he was just tired, one of the two. Blanche even told Clyde, "Okay, if we all get killed here tonight, you can't say I didn't warn you."
Wow. See, Blanche kind of knows, like, as unwilling as she has been, she has the vibe sensor.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, foreshadowing if I've ever heard it.
I know, but she just kind of, she knew when she got roped in, something was up.
Well, yeah. The whole family unit of, like, Clyde and Bonnie and all of them, they knew that Bonnie and Clyde were on a very quick path to destruction. All of them were like, we're just waiting for this to blow up and for them to die, basically.
Yeah, I mean, how many officers have they killed?
A lot.
10?
Yeah. I think in their entire criminal career, I think they killed 12 to 15 or something.
Oh, it's so awful.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, they're just trying to do their job.
Yeah, it's not great. So Buck and Blanche talked about their next steps. They could leave and go to Canada and live off the grid somewhere together, which sounded great to Blanche. But unfortunately, they would never get there. They didn't know it at the time, but there was a place next door called the Red Crown Tavern where police would hang out and have their lunch. And they would notice a weird group of newcomers with newspaper taped over their windows and also hear the local gossip that spread really fast that the Barrow Gang was staying there. So Blanche's suspicions were correct. They knew exactly who they were and were talking about it with everyone, including the police.
Why would you put newspaper over your windows?
So they couldn't see in?
Like, that's not sketchy.
Yeah, I mean, at this point,
guys,
they're making mistakes.
Right.
That night when they went to sleep, Blanche saw a flash of light outside and heard a knock at the door, and it was the sheriff with 14 other police officers from Kansas City behind him with machine guns and an armored car. So they're kind of...
Wow, they brought the platoon.
Yeah, they know what's up. If it's the Barrow Gang, they need this amount of force. When they heard it was the police outside, Buck sprung up and started getting dressed silently, and Blanche began trying to stall, saying that she was getting decent. But Buck didn't know that there were over a dozen police officers outside with better guns than they had ever been up against. Clyde had been woken up by the commotion, and that was when the shooting started, from both of the cabin windows. Clyde and WD in one cabin, and Buck in the other, all shooting out at these 14 police officers. They were desperately trying to find a way out. They ran into the garage that was attached to their cabin, but when Clyde opened it, he saw the armored car that had been parked in front. So he opened fire on it, and it wasn't as armored as they thought because the man inside was shot in both legs. Clyde had been able to shoot his way out of the garage, and Bonnie and WD got into the V8, but Buck and Blanche had to run through open gunfire to get to the car. As they ran, a shot hit Buck in the left side of his temple, coming out of his forehead, and took a large chunk out of his head, and his brain was visible. Blanche thought he was dead, but she still stopped and looped her arm around his and dragged him into the car. As they drove away, police continued firing at them, blowing out the back window of the car. Blanche, who had been in the back seat covering Buck with her body, looked up as this happened, and shards of glass rained down onto her eyes. Her vision went out as blood ran down her face. When they finally got away, the group was in shambles. Everything was soaked in blood. As they drove, Buck went in and out of consciousness. They poured hydrogen peroxide and an antiseptic with mercury in it into the hole in his head to try to sterilize it, and Bonnie and Clyde attempted to get the shards of glass out of Blanche's eyeballs with tweezers.
Oh my God.
As they drove, they threw bloody bandages out of the car window, leaving a trail of breadcrumbs. People were just reporting bloody bandages. They were leaving a trail.
I can't believe that they got out of this.
I know.
Like, every time they encounter police, it's like they shot their way out of it.
Yeah.
Like, people, nobody hits Clyde ever, it seems like.
Yeah, so a lot of people were talking about Clyde as if he had some, like, supernatural power to get out of situations or something.
Well,
like,
it really does seem like he does.
I know. Yeah, he's really good at it. So, yeah. I don't know.
Well, the other thing is he's got a lot of experience in this.
That's
and
true.
It might be the cops' first time dealing with something like this.
That's true. So they kept moving, but this time it was different. They were all injured and very vulnerable. Buck couldn't eat, so Blanche didn't eat. And they all knew that Buck was going to die. They stopped in Dexfield Park near Dexter, Iowa, to basically give Buck a place to die. Blanche's eyes had been getting a little bit better. She had been wearing sunglasses and using eye drops, but she still had fine shards of glass in her eye and one big piece in one of her pupils that they couldn't get out.
Oh my God, the eyes.
Yeah, I know, I know.
I can't do the eyes.
Buck actually hung on for much longer than they anticipated. Clyde and WD had even dug a grave for him in this park, but this was kind of a problem because it was a public park, and their car was riddled with bullet holes, and they were covered head to toe in blood and in torn clothes, and it was obvious who they were. They got spotted by a group of Girl Scouts and also a man who was walking through the park picking blackberries, and they planned to leave the next morning, but they had been reported.
Yeah, guys, why are we in the public park? I can't even go to the park to smoke weed back when it was illegal. You know what I mean?
Let alone be the Barrow Gang out
right,
in the open.
Let alone bury a body
yeah,
in the
true.
Public park.
Yeah, your brother's body. As the police set up around the park to get the Barrow Gang that night, the atmosphere was almost like a party. Word had gotten around, and the local newspaper even sent a photographer, and local men who had been drinking showed up and had to be disarmed by the police who were, like, setting up to get the Barrow Gang. And they were like, hey, don't blow our freaking cover, you drunk idiots. Like, what the hell? Yeah. Anyway, there were also a bunch of cars blocking the road. So in the very early hours of the morning, the five somehow clueless outlaws were caught off guard. I don't know how, but they were. And Blanche said it went from being dead silent to hearing Clyde yell, look out, and then shooting started. Blanche, who was in the back seat of a newly stolen car with Buck, rolled him over and put her body over his. WD and Clyde were both shot. WD in his leg and upper right chest, and Clyde was shot multiple times in his legs and shoulders, to the point where he couldn't drive and actually ended up backing over a stump and getting stuck, so Bonnie yelled to run. But she could barely walk. Clyde grabbed a handgun and yelled for everyone to follow him as he shot back at the law. Blanche and Buck didn't make it very far before Buck fainted. But Clyde kept running, and he and WD got on either side of Bonnie and kept going, knowing that he would never see his brother again. Blanche called to Clyde, but he didn't stop. She was staying with Buck. Blanche tried to hide them as well as she could, but she knew it was over. They had enough time to say their final words and I love yous and even lit a cigarette before the police got to them and arrested them. Buck tried to shoot the police one more time as they approached, and they ended up shooting him another 6 times. Blanche was pulled from Buck, kicking and screaming, but she was unharmed. Buck died a few days later at the age of 30, and Blanche would be sentenced to 10 years in prison, but only ended up spending 6 in there, and honestly didn't have a bad time in prison. She made friends and ended up totally fine.
Oh my God.
I mean, she was devastated about Buck, of course, but
yeah,
considering what she could have gone through, she actually didn't have a terrible time.
Well, it's kind of amazing that Buck shot back at the cops. They hit him 6 times. He didn't die right away.
Yeah, days later.
And they missed her.
Yeah. Something kind of morbid was Clyde's mother, Cumie, waited to buy Buck's headstone because she knew she would have to buy Clyde soon, and she'd get a discount if she bought more than one.
Well, that's just good thinking.
That's, yeah, I mean, she's poor, so she's really, but I mean, can you imagine?
I can't imagine being his mother at all.
Well, like, no.
I mean, how do you get to the point where you just give up because he's not going to change? But it's your baby,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, my baby killed 12 cops.
Yeah, well, like I said earlier, like, they knew Clyde was going to die. It was just a matter of when. So she waited to buy the headstones to get a package deal, I guess.
That is crazy.
Yeah, I know. Clyde, Bonnie, and WD ended up stealing another farmer's car and got away. They were on the run once again and actually ended up spending a lot of their final weeks in and around West Dallas near their family, which was good, but also they knew Bonnie and Clyde were in terrible shape and the end was very near. I mean, by the time they made it back at this point, like, Bonnie was really thin. Her leg was a mess. She had scars. She was shot. Like, there was a lot of badness. Clyde had been shot multiple times. It was bad. So Clyde told WD to leave. He was only 17 and still had a chance at life. He also told WD that if and when he got caught by police, to say that he had been an unwilling participant in their crimes and was basically a hostage, which he did end up doing. They apprehended WD before they were able to track down Bonnie and Clyde and thought that he was the ticket to getting them, but he wouldn't tell them anything and stuck to his story. Despite that, he was still sentenced to 15 years in prison, but he got out and he was fine.
I mean, that's light. You're involved in, I guess they probably can't prove that you were involved in the cop murders.
Yeah. I mean, he got 15 years, so.
Right.
They could prove something.
They got something on him.
But that brings us to the end of Bonnie and Clyde. Before the very end, in January of 1934, Clyde actually did end up going through with his jailbreak of Eastham. Because remember, he was really wanting to break people out of Eastham. So he did, to a very small scale. Raymond Hamilton and 4 other prisoners managed to escape, and Clyde and Bonnie were their getaway drivers. And everyone knew Clyde had helped in this jailbreak because Raymond had told literally anyone who would listen to him that Clyde Barrow would be breaking him out of prison any day now. And the papers ran with it. And they were right because Clyde had broken him out of prison.
Lo and behold, there he was.
Yes. And this prison break left 1 prison guard dead and another hospitalized. So law enforcement were desperate to get Clyde Barrow because he was making a mockery of them. Law enforcement from different states and departments all banded together to tirelessly track and capture the infamous Bonnie and Clyde, and they formed what they called the Posse, which I'm sure sounded cool at the time, but sounds kind of lame now. But
yeah, I feel like this is a nickname that, like, moms who go to PTA meetings would give themselves.
We're the Posse.
We're the Posse.
We're the cool moms.
We're going to keep this school in line.
So Frank Hammer was kind of the leader of the Posse, and he had become obsessed with Bonnie and Clyde. He was trying to track them down and had even figured out their normal pattern of travel and spent a while driving this map he had in his head to try to find them. He'd even sleep in his car and eat the same kind of food as them, trying to get into their heads and figure them out. But that brings us to Ivy Methvin. He was willing to talk and set up Bonnie and Clyde. He was the 49-year-old father of Henry Methvin. He had been one of the men who Clyde had broken out of Eastham, and Ivy and his wife Ava were pissed because they had been doing what Cumie had been doing for Clyde when he was in prison, trying to get their son out of prison the right way. And they were actually like right on the brink of getting him out before he escaped. And now he was an escaped convict and was a wanted man. So they were pissed.
Yeah, going back very soon.
Yeah. So Bonnie and Clyde ended up at an abandoned house near the Methvin house that Ivy had told them about when they visited with Henry. He said this would be a safe place for them to lay low. But everyone knew everyone in this town, so it was no secret that Bonnie and Clyde were staying there. Ivy ended up getting in contact with police and told them that his son would work with them to throw Bonnie and Clyde under the bus in exchange for his immunity and freedom.
Sold.
In mid-March, Frank Hammer and Bob Alcorn met with Ivy Methvin to negotiate this deal. And they didn't care about Henry Methvin. They only wanted Bonnie and Clyde, so it was a pretty easy deal to make. They decided Ivy would stand on the side of the road with his car to make it look like he had broken down, and when Clyde and Bonnie drove past, they would stop to help him, thinking he was a friend in need, and then they would ambush the couple and arrest them. Henry knew of this plan, and knew that Bonnie and Clyde both trusted him entirely. He was like their new WD, but he was fine with setting them up. Clyde had recently told Bonnie to stay in West Dallas with her mother and that he would sign a letter saying that she had nothing to do with any of their crimes, which could keep her from getting in as much trouble as him when they were inevitably caught. But Bonnie would not be separated from Clyde and said she knew what their fate was and she wanted to be with him. So she stayed. They knew this ambush needed to happen in a very isolated place because they didn't want any innocent civilians to get hurt. They also needed Bonnie and Clyde alone in the car. That meant Henry couldn't be in the car, which didn't happen a lot, but they had a plan. They agreed if they had gotten split up, Bonnie and Clyde would be able to find Henry at his parents' house where they could then pick him back up. So Henry managed to slip away from Bonnie and Clyde after a day out to hide at his cousin's place and then notify police that they would be headed back toward the Methvin house. And they knew that would put him driving down Louisiana Highway 154, where they would set up their trap. Clyde was driving a Ford V8 that he had recently stolen that was Cordoba gray, which would end up being the infamous death car. On May 23rd, 1934, Ivan Methvin parked his truck near the meeting spot and removed one of the wheels as if he were changing a flat tire. In the bushes was Frank Hammer, Bob Alcorn, Ted Hinton, Manny Gault, Sheriff Jordan, and his deputy, Prentice Oakley, which was the posse. They had agreed it wouldn't be right to shoot a woman, so they would do their best to avoid killing Bonnie. They felt Clyde probably wouldn't go with them willingly, but they agreed that they would at least try to give him the option. Which was how they landed on planting Ivy Methvin with a flat tire as bait, so Clyde would stop the car and get out to help. So they hid in the brush the night before it was supposed to happen and waited for the big moment. A few of them were armed with BARs, which was Clyde's weapon of choice. They had a few rifles, a shotgun, and another automatic weapon for good measure. They also had a video camera to make sure they captured it on film so no one would forget who put an end to Bonnie and Clyde.
Wait, they have video? I mean, I guess they have movies at this point, but it's just, I guess I never thought about it.
Yeah, they do. There is video.
Are they sitting there like cranking it?
No, I don't think so. I mean, maybe.
Wild.
I actually don't know.
Yeah, it's like just funny to think that like back then they're like, dude, we gotta get this.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very morbid thing. You can find video footage of Bonnie and Clyde's actual dead bodies in the car. So
whoa,
that does exist. After getting sandwiches from a nearby cafe, Bonnie and Clyde unsuspectingly drove down the road eating. Clyde was dressed in his usual suit, and he had chosen a blue shirt and a hat, and Bonnie was in a dress, and the windows were rolled down since it was a warm, sunny morning. At 9:15, they heard the roar of the V8 engine coming down the road. When Clyde spotted Ivy, he slowed down and stopped, as they knew he would. But before Frank Hammer could yell out to Clyde to surrender, Deputy Prentice Oakley leapt up and aimed his gun at Clyde. The law enforcement later reported that Clyde spotted Oakley and shot at them, so they had to fire back. But it's a lot more likely that Prentice Oakley just began shooting well before Clyde even knew what was happening. I mean, that's definitely what happened because Bonnie and Clyde never fired off a shot that day.
Yeah, well, it's hard to make that claim when they haven't shot any bullets.
Yeah, but they had to say that to make it not look so terrible. One of the many shots went right through the window and straight into Clyde's head, killing him instantly. Actually, the first shot.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
After all this time, after all the shots that have missed,
mm-hmm. They got a headshot.
Over a dozen officers that have shot at Clyde.
He was caught all of them that missed. Off guard, I guess. And then he got a clear headshot.
What a way to go.
So that would have been a perfect time to offer Bonnie a way out of her untimely death, since, you know, they were so weird about shooting a woman. But Clyde hadn't been able to turn the engine off, and apparently when he died, the car continued driving off into a ditch on the side of the road. And because of that, all of the law enforcement opened fire. Before her death, the men heard a high, shrill scream from Bonnie that would haunt them for the rest of their lives. Within seconds, both of the outlaws were dead. It's believed law enforcement fired over 150 shots into the car, and as if that wasn't enough, Frank Hammer emerged from the hill, approached the car, and fired more shots through the windshield at Bonnie and Clyde, just to be sure. Bonnie had been shot 26 times and Clyde 17, even though the first bullet had killed him. It had happened so fast, Bonnie still had her hands clutched around her sandwich, and Clyde wasn't wearing his shoes because he liked to drive in his socks. The embalmer later said he had a hard time embalming them because they had so many bullet holes. When the smoke cleared, the six men surrounded the car and there was blood everywhere. The notorious gangsters hadn't even fired off one shot. Their bodies were recorded, and the men went through their things like vultures, taking whatever they could, including a suitcase full of cash. The bullet hole-riddled V8 was towed with the bodies of Bonnie and Clyde still inside. They were taken through the town, and townspeople got a look at the historic and grisly scene, pulling off strips of Bonnie's dress and hair, or Clyde's ear and trigger fingers, as keepsakes.
Oh my god.
Yeah. People dug bullets out of tree trunks, slivers of glass from the shattered car windows. They would take whatever they could. And that happened all day, since they were headed back to Texas with them in the car, as, you know, just bodies in the car. There were like 200 cars following them like some morbid parade. Bonnie and Clyde wished to be buried side by side, but the Parker family wouldn't allow it. Her mother wanted to grant her final wish to be brought home, but mobs surrounded the Parker house, making that impossible. More than 20,000 people attended Parker's funeral, and her family had difficulty reaching her gravesite. Thousands of people gathered outside both Dallas funeral homes they were held in, hoping for a chance to view the bodies. Parker was buried in Fishtrap Cemetery, although her body was moved in 1945 to the New Crown Hill Cemetery in Dallas. The Barrow brothers shared a single granite marker with their names on it and the saying, selected by Clyde, "Gone but not forgotten."
Well, he was right.
Yeah, he sure was.
Certainly not forgotten, even almost 100 years later.
Yeah. And another crazy thing about the day their bodies were taken through town was the truck towing their V8 with their bodies inside broke down in front of a middle school. And a bunch of middle schoolers came out and surrounded the car and pulled the sheets off of them and got the clearest view you could possibly get of their bodies, which were mangled. I mean, they were shot over 150 times. I mean, I guess not their bodies, but the car. So there's that as well. But yeah, I mean, can you imagine that the people who witnessed them in that state were like ripping off pieces of Bonnie's dress and like trying to cut off Clyde's finger and his ear? Like, how disgusting.
Yeah, super gross. I'm like, you know, before you said that, I was thinking, you know, you could sit here and like say that the cops didn't give them a chance to like surrender.
Mm-hmm.
But really, like Clyde was a serial killer.
That's true.
Of police.
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't know. If I was a cop, I don't think I'd give him a chance either, because it's not like he asked questions.
Yeah.
You know,
it's clear that he was going to shoot.
He just opens fire
yeah.
Almost every time. Right.
Yeah, but they did make a whole big thing about shooting Bonnie and how wrong that was, and then they just immediately opened fire, even though Clyde was already dead. So,
well, they probably didn't know that.
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know, man.
I really don't know. But
the point I was making is, like, I was thinking about that, and then it's just, like, this gross display of human behavior.
Yeah.
You know, people want a keepsake.
Mm-hmm.
It's just gross.
Yeah, super gross.
all around.
It is. Yeah. No, I mean, they were outlaws and criminals and whatever, but they're still people.
Right. And they got it on video.
Yeah. You can find pictures and videos of Bonnie and Clyde dead. So.
Yeah. The end was going to be gruesome.
Yes. We knew we were headed toward a very gruesome ending. And here we are. That is the story of Bonnie and Clyde.
So many parts of the story confuse me. Like the bond that they had, and then how they were able to derail Buck from like a normal life, you know? And then WD also escaped and then was just like, hey, you want to come back? He's like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what that deal was, but I guess he just had a little quick hiatus and then was like, actually, I could get back into this life.
Yeah. And I the whole time when he was mentioned, all I could think of is they missed a great opportunity to call him WD-40. Because he's so slippery.
Was WD-40 even invented?
Probably not.
Maybe they named WD-40 after WD.
That was another thought that I had that I decided to keep in at the time. But yeah, just perplexing and gruesome.
I can't imagine going through so many injuries. Like, I mean, after Bonnie's leg was soaked in battery acid, like that is gruesome enough. But then there was like multiple bullet wounds happening from all of them to the point where, you know, Buck died. He got shot in the head and like...
And they put mercury in the wound.
Yeah.
That's even crazier.
Yeah, right. Like another fun crossover episode with the Mercury Girls. But Blanche's...
Radium Girls?
Oh yeah, I meant Radium. Whatever. I think of Mercury and Radium the same thing.
Who are the Mercury Girls?
The Mercury Girls. No, but thinking about Blanche's eyes...
Oh, ooh. Made me want to die.
And she went blind in one eye afterward. Like she did get some of her sight back, but she did go blind in one eye, I believe.
Yeah.
Because the big shard that was in one of her eyes couldn't be taken out, and it had to be taken out when she was like already in jail. So yeah. So that glass was in her eye for a long time.
Yeah.
Kind of gross. But yeah, I don't know. This story is insane. And so there's so much to it, and there's so much more too. Like almost everyone or a lot of people in Bonnie and Clyde's lives wrote memoirs, or like, you know, their time with Bonnie and Clyde. Like Blanche wrote one, Emma Parker, Bonnie's mother, wrote one. I think a couple of Clyde's siblings wrote one. So there's a lot of information out there about like all the different perspectives of like who they were and everything. So, and also Bonnie has all her poetry and all the writing that she wrote. So there's a lot out there. And shout out to Stephanie Harlow on YouTube, because she has like an 8-part series about Bonnie and Clyde that is like maybe 12 hours long. Like, no joke. There's so much information. So anyway, if you're interested, go check her stuff out, because there's so much more. But this story is insane, and I hope you enjoyed it, because I enjoyed looking into it.
Yeah, I was very interested. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's one of those stories that is so recognizable, and yet I really didn't know much about it.
I didn't either. I really, like, I knew who Bonnie and Clyde were, but I didn't know any specifics of their story. And now I do. Maybe it'll come in handy for some trivia someday. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well. But like, it's really interesting. I do wonder how many cars Clyde stole throughout.
So many.
Like, also the fact that people were just leaving their keys in the ignition. It's like he didn't even really have to try for most of them. Like, sure, he hotwired some, but like many were just turn the key and drive away. Like.
Yeah, I don't know. It is amazing, like, the trust that people had.
Yeah, seriously.
But yeah, couldn't imagine doing that today. We get alerts all the time about people like stealing shit, but yeah,
it's a different time.
It's like, yeah, no, it's a time capsule that's super interesting.
Yeah, it's almost 100 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, like this was happening in 32, 33. That's 2025. Like, I mean, we're not 100 years yet, but almost. Crazy.
Wild.
But anyway, why don't we move on so that we have a bit of a palate cleanser and you can tell me your good thing. What is your good thing?
My good thing is that my cousins from San Francisco are in town, and they're fun to hang out with. I love seeing them.
Love it.
And yeah, they're cute, fun to play with. And I don't get to see them that often, so that's definitely a good thing. What's yours?
Totally. My good thing is that our pottery pieces that we made are ready to be picked up, and I'm really excited to get them because I haven't seen them yet, and I can't wait to use a juicer on a juicer that I made with my hands.
That is really cool.
To be green like a lime, which I will juice on it.
Yep.
But anyway, thank you so much for listening. If you would like to check out all of our bonus episodes, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. We have 41 over there. Go over there and check it out. You won't regret it. If you are anybody who knows a story of survival or something crazy that's happening and you'd like to share it with us and possibly hear it on an upcoming listener's episode, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. We have a TikTok that is Not Today Podcast and a Twitter that is Not Today Podcast, but the TM Lena Podcast is a 3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there. Yeah.